إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله أما بعد then to continue with العقيدة الطحاوية The creed compiled by Imam Abu Ja'far al-Tahawi, rahimahullah, with the explanation of Shaykh Salih al-Fawzan, hafidhahullah, then last week and the week before, we had some points with regard to the companions of Allah's Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, points 194, and then last week we had points 195, to point 201. Then just briefly, first of all, something that's been said a number of times, so there shouldn't be any excuse with regard to questions, who can name the 10 companions who were promised paradise by name? Who can name all 10? And if not, then why not? Since no one's putting their hand up, I'll assume that everyone knows the answer then, inshallah. So, okay, 1, 2. As the brother mentioned, he mentioned 5, and I stopped him there. The 4 Khulafa, Ar-Rashidun, Abu Bakr radiallahu an, and Umar radiallahu an, and Uthman radiallahu an, and Ali radiallahu an, and Abdurrahman ibn Auf. Can somebody mention to me where each of them died? Somebody else mention to me where each of those 5 died? All right, Abu Bakr, let's make it easy then. Abu Bakr radiallahu anhu. Hey, al-Madina. Umar radiallahu anhu. Medina? Hey, al-Madina. Uthman radiallahu anhu. He says Medina. Yeah, Al-Madina radiallahu an. Ali radiallahu an. Hey, no. Abdurrahman ibn Auf. Walaykum salam wa rahmatullah. Abdurrahman ibn Auf. Right, the other 5 then, inshallah. Who's left? Sayyid ibn Zayd. Az-Zubayr. Why did they die? Talha. Why did Talha ibn Ubaidillah die? No. Now it's on the outskirts of Basra, close to Basra, either in the city of Basra or close to Basra. Az-Zubayr. Az-Zubayr radiallahu anhu. Yeah, same place. After the Battle of the Camel, which was near the city of Basra. Which leaves us with Sa'id ibn Zayd. Al-Madina, yeah, outskirts of Al-Madina. Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, likewise, meaning Wadi al-Aqiq, which is the north, the valley to the north of Al-Madina, both of them. And the one left, Abu Ubaidah ibn al-Jarrah. Anyway, next week's homework is pretty clear. Shall redo the homework we didn't do before. Palestine, yeah. Palestine, the plague of Amawas, radiallahu anhu wa anhum. Then to continue with the lesson then, inshaAllah. Then, the last point that we had was point number 201, where the list of the ten companions promised paradise was given. Then, At-Tahawi, rahimahullah, he said, وَمَنْ أَحْسَنَ الْقَوْلَ فِي أَصْحَابِ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمْ وَأَزْوَاجِهِ الطَّاهِرَاتِ مِنْ كُلِّ دَنَسْ وَذُرِّيَّاتِهِ الْمُقَدَّسِينَ مِنْ كُلِّ رِجْسْ فَقَدْ بَرِئَ مِنَ النِّفَاقِ. And whoever speaks well of the companions of Allah's Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and his wives, who were pure and free of having any stain upon their honor, and his offspring, who were untainted and free of every impurity, then he is free of hypocrisy. In other words, whoever speaks well of the companions of Allah's Messenger, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and speaks well of his wives, and speaks well of his children, his offspring, then this person is free of hypocrisy. It's free of nifaq. Shaykh al-Fawzan, Hafidhullah, he said, after mentioning what is obligatory with respect to the companions, he moves on to mentioning the Ahlul Bayt, the people of the family of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And the first ones of the Ahlul Bayt, the first ones of the family of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam were Azwajun Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam. The first ones from his family were the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Allah the Most High said, Innama yuridu Allahu liyudhhiba ankum ar-rijsa ahla al-bayt وَيُطَهِّرَكُمْ تَطْهِيرًا. Surah Al-Ahzab, the 33rd surah, ayah 33. With the explanation, Allah only wishes to remove evil from you, O people of the household, and to keep you pure from the pollution which affects the people of sins. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, and this is an address to them. I mean, this ayah here, this part of the ayah, is an address to the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And of course, in the ayah, they're addressed as Ahl al-Bayt, as people of the family, people of the household of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. Which is why Shaykh al-Fawzan said, they're the ones who enter first and foremost into his family. He said, so the ones who enter first, I mean first and foremost, into Ahlul Bayt, into being the family and household of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam are his wives, and then his qaraba, and then his close relatives, alayhi salatu wassalam. So the ones first and foremost classified as being the family of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam are his wives, and then after them entering into his family are those who are his blood relatives, his close relatives. And Shaykh al-Fawzan explained who they are. He said, and they are the family of Al-Abbas and the family of Abu Talib and the family of Al-Harith ibn Abdul Muttalib. In other words, the families of three of his uncles. The family of Al-Abbas, the family of Abu Talib, and the family of Al-Harith ibn Abdul Muttalib. Then he goes on to mention what the Rafida say, the Rafida Shia. He said, I mean, what we just heard here is what is correct, contrary to what the Rafida say. Now he goes on to mention what they say. He said, so the Rafida, they attack the character of Aisha, and they describe her with that which Allah declared her innocent of. And this is a denial of the truth of what Allah the Mighty and Majestic said. I mean, this is takdhib. What they say about Aisha radiallahu anha, Allah declared her free of it. So they're stating that she is guilty of it. It's a denial of what Allah said. It's calling the lie to what Allah the Mighty and Majestic said. And it is to describe Allah with having chosen for his messenger a woman who was not befitting for him. And that's what they're saying amounts to. That's what they're saying of the Rafida amounts to. What they say about Aisha radiallahu anha, they're saying would mean that Allah chose as a wife for his Prophet someone who's not befitting as a wife for him. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, and this is kufr. This is unbelief in Allah. Allah the Most High said, Al-Khabithatu lil-Khabithina wal-Khabithuna lil-Khabithat wa-Tayyibatu lil-Tayyibina wa-Tayyibuna lil-Tayyibat. Surah An-Nur, the 24th Surah, Ayah 26. With the explanation, good women are for good men, and good men are for good women, and evil women are for evil men, and evil men are for evil women. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was good and pure, so Allah would not choose for him except a good and pure woman. And Shaykh al-Fawzan is clearly taking here the tafsir of this ayah of some of the Salaf. Some of the Salaf explained this ayah as we heard. It means good women are for good men are for good women, evil men are for evil women, evil women are for evil men. Others from the Salaf, they have a second explanation, which is more common, that they say it means evil words. It's referring to evil words. Evil words only emanate from evil men, and so on. And from evil women, and good words emanate from good men and good women, and so on. Then Shaykh al-Fawzan, he moved on with regard to the matter of the offspring, of the children of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and he said, وَذُرِّيَّاتُهُ, and his offspring. What is meant by them are his children, alayhi salatu wassalam. And the children of his daughter, Fatima, who were Al-Hasan and Al-Husayn, and their children, They are the dhurriya, they are the progeny or offspring of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. That's what's meant by his dhurriya, his progeny, his offspring. I mean his children and the children of his daughter Fatima, who were Al-Hasan and Al-Husayn, and their children. Then At-Tahawi rahimahullah, he brings another point. He moves on and he brings a different point. So At-Tahawi rahimahullah, he said, which is point 203 here, وَعُلَمَاءُ السَّلَفِ وَعُلَمَاءُ السَّلَفِ مِنَ السَّابِقِينَ وَمَنْ بَعْدَهُمْ مِنَ التَّابِعِينَ أَهْلُ الْخَيْرِ وَالْأَثَرِ وَأَهْلُ الْفِقْهِ وَالنَّظَرِ لَا يُذْكَرُونَ إِلَّا بِالْجَمِيلِ وَمَنْ ذَكَرَهُمْ بِسُوءٍ فَهُوَ عَلَى غَيْرِ السَّبِيلِ. And the early scholars from the Salaf, from the early predecessors, and the Tabi'een, the successors who came after them, the people upon good, and the narrations, and the people of fiqh and discernment, are not to be mentioned except with fine words. And whoever speaks ill of them, then he is not upon the correct path. Just repeat that. And the early scholars from the Salaf, from the early predecessors, and the Tabi'een, the successors who came after them, the people upon good and the narrations, and the people of fiqh and discernment, are not to be mentioned except with fine words. And whoever speaks ill of them, then he is not upon the correct path. He is on something other than the correct path. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, Hafidhullah, when he... You know, the author At-Tahawi, rahimahullah, he said, when he, rahimahullah, finished dealing with the rights of the companions and the Ahlul Bayt and the family of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and what is due to them from love and alliance, and not belittling them, not belittling any one of them, he then moved on to those who followed them in excellence. And they are the ulama, they are the scholars, the people of knowledge. So the ulama, the scholars of this ummah, have a position and have excellence after the companions. I mean, their status and their position is in a state and position after that of the companions. He said, because they are warathatul anbiya, they, the scholars, are the inheritors of the prophets. As he, alayhi salatu wassalam, said, al-ulama'u warathatul anbiya. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam said, the scholars are the inheritors of the prophets. A hadith mentioned by Al-Bukhari in his Sahih, in a chapter heading in the Book of Knowledge. In the chapter, knowledge comes before saying and action. So Al-Bukhari mentions this there without connecting the chain of narration. And it's reported with a fully connected chain of narration by Abu Dawood and Ibn Majah, and at Tirmidhi, and it's from a hadith of Abu Darda radiallahu anhu, and declared sahih, authentic, by Shaykh al-Albani rahimahullah. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, so commenting upon the hadith, the scholars are the inheritors of the prophets. Shaykh al-Fawzan said, and what is meant by them is the scholars of the Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah. the people of knowledge and discernment and fiqh, and the Ahlul Athar, the people of the narrations, and they are Ahlul Hadith, and they are the people of Hadith. Then Shaykh al-Fawzan said, and the ulama, the scholars, are of two categories. The first category are the ulama al-athar, the scholars of the narrations, and they are the narrators and scholars of hadith. Those who gave great care and attention to the sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and they preserved it, and they defended it, and they put it, I mean they put the sunnah, before the ummah, pure and clear, just as it was spoken by Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And they distanced from it every foreign thing which had been entered into it, and every lie. So they put the fabricated ahadith, those hadith which are mawdu, fabrications, they put the fabricated ahadith to one side, and they quarantined them. So these scholars are called ulama or riwaya, the scholars of narration. So that's the first category that Shaykh al-Fawzan mentions for the scholars of narration, scholars of hadith, scholars of narration. Then he mentioned the second category. He said, وَهُمُ الْفُقَهَا, and they are the scholars of fiqh, the jurists. And they are the ones who extracted the rulings from these evidences. And they clarified their fiqh. And they clarified the knowledge contained in these evidences. And they explained them and clarified them to the people. So they are called ulama ud-diraya, the scholars of understanding of the texts. And of course, to be in that category, then they'll have to have some degree of knowledge of, to be of some degree within the first category. They have to be scholars of hadith to have any understanding of fiqh. Then Shaykh al-Fawzan said, and from them, I mean from the scholars, from them are those who combined the two sciences, I mean these two categories. Some scholars, they combine both of these categories, the riwaya and the diraya, the narration of hadith and the understanding of hadith. He said, so from them, there are those who combine these two sciences, and they are called fuqaha'ul muhaddithin, the jurists from the scholars of hadith, such as Imam Ahmad, and Malik, and Ash-Shafi'i, and Al-Bukhari. So Shaykh al-Fawzan gives some examples, some famous examples, and great examples, from scholars who combine both of these categories of knowledge. So they gathered both. And of course these are just examples. There are many other scholars as well, but these are famous examples at the forefront of such scholars. Imam Ahmad and Imam Malik and Imam Shafi'i and Imam al-Bukhari. Then he said, and all of those scholars have fadl, have virtue. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, نَدَّرَ اللَّهُ امْرَأً سَمِعَ مَقَالَتِي فَوَعَاهَا فَأَدَّاهَا كَمَا سَمِعَهَا. That the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, may Allah give brightness to a person who hears my saying, preserves it and conveys it just as he heard it. In a footnote, they mention that this hadith is reported by Ibn Majah. And as a side point, some of the scholars, such as As-Suyuti and others, they mention this hadith is a hadith which is mutawatir, reported by a very large number of companions, and then by a huge number of narrators at every stage thereafter. As I say, As-Suyuti and others as well say this hadith is a hadith which is mutawatir. And you'll find it reported by At-Tirmidhi and Ibn Majah from a hadith of Zayd ibn Thabit, radiallahu anhu. Declared Sahih by Shaykh al-Albani. Also reported by Tirmidhi and Ibn Majah as a hadith of Ibn Mas'ud, radiallahu an, again declared Sahih by Shaykh al-Albani. Also reported by Ibn Majah from a hadith of Jubair ibn Mut'im, radiallahu an, declared Sahih by Shaykh al-Albani also. And by others, reported by many others as well. Then Shaykh al-Fawzan comments upon this hadith and said, so the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam made dua for them and praised them. I mean, the narrators of hadith, the scholars of hadith, in this hadith here, he made dua for them and praised them. I mean, نَضَّرَ اللَّهُ مْرَأً سَمِعَ مَقَالَتِي فَوَعَاهَا فَأَدَّاهَا كَمَا سَمِعَهَا. May Allah give brightness to the face of a person who hears my saying, preserves it, and conveys it to others, just as he heard it. Then Shaykh Fawzan, of course the scholars of hadith, they mention this hadith amongst the virtues of the people of hadith. They mention this hadith amongst the, when they mention the virtues of the people of hadith, they mention this hadith amongst them. Then Shaykh Fawzan said, so the ulama, the scholars, established that which Allah made obligatory upon them with regard to guarding the religion and the aqidah, the creed and belief. So they made clear the ahkam, they made clear the rulings and the laws of inheritance and the halal and the haram, those things which are lawful and those things which are prohibited. And they made clear also the fiqh, the knowledge and understanding of the book and the sunnah. So they, the scholars, they laid down a tremendous treasure for this ummah, from which benefit is taken, and upon which analogy can be made for problems which arise newly. The scholars, with the work that they've done, they've laid down a great treasure for this ummah, from which benefit is taken, and when new matters arise as well, then they can be, analogy can be made with that great treasure left behind by the scholars. Then Shaykh al-Fawzan makes a point with regard to al-fiqh, knowledge and understanding. Al-fiqh, he said, al-fiqh, knowledge and understanding, is of two categories. The first category is al-fiqh al-akbar, the greater fiqh, which is the fiqh of aqidah, which is the knowledge of aqidah, creed and belief. That's the greater fiqh. And the second category is fiqhun amali, fiqh relating to practical actions. Obviously that is what is commonly understood to be fiqh. If you hear the word fiqh, if someone uses the word fiqh, then usually what's understood is the second category here, meaning the fiqh relating to rulings of the deen, rulings upon which actions are based. Shaykh al-Fawzan makes the important point here. There's actually two branches of fiqh, the first of them being the fiqh, the greater fiqh, which is knowledge and understanding of the aqidah, the creed and belief. And the second category, the fiqh relating to actions. He said, and this is not less important than the greater fiqh. And this, the second one, is the fiqh concerning rulings and actions. Then he said, and with regard to the virtue of the scholars, there occurs in the hadith from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, فَضْلُ الْعَالِمِ عَلَى الْعَابِدِ كَفَضْلِ الْقَمَرِ عَلَى سَائِرِ الْكَوَاكِبِ, that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, the excellence of the scholar over the worshipper is like the excellence of the moon over the rest of the stars. In a footnote they mention, this hadith is reported by Tirmidhi. It's hadith 2682, and authenticated by Sheikh al-Albani. Then he said, Sheikh al-Fawzan said, and that is because, explaining why the scholar has such great virtue, even over a worshipper, he said, and that is because their benefit passes on to others. I mean, the virtue of the scholar, it passes on to other people. He teaches other people, and he benefits other people. Then he said, and in a narration, it is mentioned, another narration of the similar narration to this, فَضْلُ الْعَالِمِ عَلَى الْعَابِدِ كَفَضْلِي عَلَى أَدْنَاكُمْ عَلَى أَدْنَاكُمْ, that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, the excellence of the scholar over the worshipper is like my excellence over the lowest of you. In a footnote they mention, reported by At-Tirmidhi. And it's from a hadith of Abu Umama al-Bahili radiallahu anhu. Again, authenticated by Sheikh al-Albani. Sheikh al-Fawzan said, so the ulama, the scholars, have respect and status. So therefore it is not permissible to attack them, nor to belittle them, even if some of them make a mistake in ijtihad, even if some of the scholars make a mistake in striving to bring out a ruling in ijtihad. So this does not necessitate belittling them, because they may make mistakes. Yet they were seeking the truth. And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, إِذَا اجْتَهَدَ الْحَاكِمْ فَأَصَابْ فَلَهُ أَجْرَانْ وَإِذَا اجْتَهَدَ فَأَخْطَعَ فَلَهُ أَجْرٌ وَاحِدٌ, that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, if the judge strives to reach what is correct and he attains what is correct, then there are two rewards for him. And if he strives and makes a mistake, then there is a single reward for him. In a footnote they mention, reported by Al-Bukhari, that's hadith 7,352, and by Muslim. And this is from a hadith of Amr ibn al-As radiallahu anhu. Sheikh al-Fawzan said, this is with regard to the ulama, the scholars, and not those who are muta'alimeen, those who make a false show of being scholars. I mean, this principle. If a scholar strives to attain what is right, he makes a due effort, then he attains what is right, he gets two rewards. If he strives and makes a mistake, then he gets one reward of striving for the truth. Sheikh al-Fawzan said, this principle, meaning this applies to the ulama, the scholars, not those who are not true scholars, those who make a false show of being scholars. Because they have no right to enter into that which they do not have the ability for. Walhamdulillah, wa sallallahu ala Muhammad. That's where we'll finish these points. Until next time, inshaAllah. And just a few points in addition. And with regard to the matter of the Sahaba, the companions, radiallahu anhum, and just a couple of extra points, with regard to the number of the companions, the total number of companions, how many companions were there altogether, radiallahu anhum? Then Abu Zur'a, the famous Imam Abu Zur'a al-Razi, is reported as having said, they witnessed along with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam at the final Hajj, the final pilgrimage, 40,000. I mean, 40,000 companions made the final Hajj. And at Tabuk, there were 70,000 with him. And he, alayhi salam, died and left behind 114,000 companions. 114,000 companions. This is mentioned by Al-Khatib in his book, it's reported by Al-Khatib in his book Al-Jami' and mentioned by Ibn al-Salah and Ibn Kathir and others as the saying of Abu Zur'a, that he mentioned the number of the companions is obviously somewhere in the region of 114,000. And with regard to another matter, the last of the companions to die, then Imam Muslim and others, amongst them Ibn al-Salah and Al-Iraqi and others, they say the last of the companions to die of all was Abu Tufayl Amir ibn Wathila radiallahu anhu, who died in Mecca. And he died, they differ about which year he died in. Either they say he died in the year 100 or 102 or up to the year 110. And Al-Dhahabi said what is correct, he died in the year 110. Wallahu a'lam. Somewhere in that region, between the year 100 after the Hijrah and 110 after the Hijrah. So he was the last of the companions to die. Abu Tufayl Amir ibn Wathila. Obviously he was a boy, he was a young boy in the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam during the last Hajj. He was a boy somewhere in the region of 7 years old or something like that. And before him, to mention the last three of the companions who died before him, it was Anas ibn Malik, a famous companion, Anas ibn Malik radiallahu an, who died in the city of Basra in the year 93 after the Hijrah. Obviously, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, it's authentic that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam made du'a for Anas, that he should be given prolonged life and blessed in his wealth and children, and that was answered. He was given that great number of children, and blessed in his wealth and long life. So Anas ibn Malik radiallahu an, he died in Basra in the year 93 after the Hijrah, and he was more than 100 years old. And just before him, as in Al-Madina, As-Sa'ib ibn Yazid radiallahu anhu. He died in Al-Madina in the year 91, at the age of 87. And then some of the people of knowledge, like Al-Hafidh ibn Kathir, in his book Al-Ba'ith al-Hathith and other scholars, they mention they go through all of the major cities of Islam and say which was the last of the companions to die in the city, in Basra, in Mecca, in Al-Madinah, and so on. Then just for something further, for those who've got patience, inshallah, I'll read it quickly because it has come before. This came, but it's a long time ago, and we can't guarantee that everyone was there during the lessons for Wasitiyah. But either way, I'll mention them quickly, inshallah. I've got two lists here. The first list is a list, obviously, because the points that we had today are with regard to the wives, the respect that's due to the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and the respect due to the children of Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So, for those who want to write anything down like this, then I've got first a list of the wives of Allah's Messenger And to make it easy, if you don't want to write it down, then some brothers are intent on making it easy for you, inshallah. He says it will be photocopied or typed up or something by next week, inshallah. So those who want to just sit back, and then you'll get it next week anyway, inshallah. So I'll quickly read for those who are listening through the microphone. As for the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and these are roughly in order, no guarantee they're exactly in order, but roughly in order. Then the first wife of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was Khadija. Khadija bint Khuwaylid. And she married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Mecca. She was his first wife. She married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Mecca 15 years before prophethood. Obviously, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was 25 years old when he married her. And she died in Mecca at the age of 64 and a half. And she's buried in the graveyard in northern Mecca, Al-Hajun. She died 3 years before the Hijrah. As for the second wife, then she was Sauda bint Zam'ah. Sauda bint Zam'ah. She also married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Mecca. It's said, and as with other things as well, they differ sometimes about the dates and so on, and years and so on, but... So it's said that she married in Ramadan in the 10th year of prophethood. In other words, 2 or 3 years before the Hijrah. And she died in Al-Madinah, either at the end of the Khilafah of Umar, or in the year 54 or 55. And different scholars report different things. Wallahu a'lam. As for the third wife, then Aisha bint Abi Bakr as-Siddiq radiallahu anha, and huma. And she married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Mecca 10 and odd months before the Hijrah, when she was aged 6. And then the marriage was consummated. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam took her in, consummated the marriage with her in Al-Madinah, in the month of Shawwal, in the 2nd year after the Hijrah, when she was aged 9. And she died in the year 57 in Al-Madinah at the age of 65. As for the fourth wife, then it was Hafsa, the daughter of Umar ibn al-Khattab radiallahu anhumah. She married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Al-Madinah in the 3rd year of the Hijrah. And she died in Sha'ban in the year 54 in Al-Madinah. And the fifth wife was Zainab bint Khuzaymah al-Hilaliya. She married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Al-Madinah, it is said in Ramadan, in the 3rd year of the Hijrah. And she died just a few months later. She'd only married for a few months. As for the sixth wife, then it was Salama, whose name was Hind bint Abi Umayyah. She married in Al-Madinah in Shawwal of the 4th year. And she died in Al-Madinah in the year 62. Radiallahu anha. As for the seventh wife, then it was Zainab bint Jahsh. Radiallahu anha, that she married in Dhul-Qa'dah in the year 5, in the 5th year. And she died in Al-Madinah in the year 20. And the eighth wife was Juwayriya bint al-Harith. She married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in the 6th year. And she died in the 50th year in Al-Madinah. And the ninth wife, Safiya bint Huyay. She married at the beginning of the 7th year. And she died in Ramadan in the year 50. Or it is said 52 in Al-Madinah. And the 10th wife, Habiba, whose name was Ramla bint Abi Sufyan. Ramla, the daughter of Abu Sufyan, radiallahu anhumah. She married in the 7th year while she was still in Abyssinia. She was still in Habsha. So the messengers were sent in between, and the marriage was arranged while she was still in Abyssinia. Then she made the hijra to Al-Madinah, and she died in Al-Madinah in the year 44. And the 11th wife was Maymuna bint Al-Harith. She married in the month of Dhul-Qa'dah in the year 7 at Sarif, a place near Mecca, Sarif. And she died at exactly the same place, Sarif, in exactly the same place where she married the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Exactly the same place where she consummated the marriage with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Sarif, near Mecca. She died in the year 51, radiallahu anhumma. Then with regard to the children of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and the references here, the main references being Sira Alam al-Bula of al-Dhahabi and al-Sira al-Nabawiya of Ibn Kathir, and al-Fusul, the shorter Sira al-Fusul of Ibn Kathir as well. So as for the children, quickly, of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, then his 7 children were, and all of them were born to his wife Khadija radiallahu anha, except for the 7th one, Ibrahim. So his children were, first, his son Al-Qasim, who was born in Mecca before Islam, and he died at the age of 2. And he was the first of the children to die. Obviously he was the eldest child and the eldest son of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and it was from him that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam took his kunya, Abul Qasim. The second child was Zainab. She was born in Mecca before Islam, and she married Abul As ibn al-Rabi ibn Abd Shams, who was her cousin, the son of her mother's sister Hala. And this was during the lifetime of her mother, after prophethood. She accepted Islam, Zainab accepted Islam, and she performed the hijrah to Al-Madinah, 6 years before her husband. Then her husband, Abul As, he accepted Islam. And then he came to Al-Madinah and joined her in the month of Muharram in the 7th year of the hijrah. And Zainab gave birth to a daughter, Umama, and who later on married Ali, after the death of Fatima. And she gave birth to a son, Ali ibn Abil As, who it is said died as a child. And she, Zainab, she died in the 8th year of the hijrah. And the 3rd child was Ruqayya, the daughter Ruqayya. She was born in Mecca before Islam, and she married Utbah, the son of Abu Lahab. But then when the ayahs of Surah Lahab came down, Abu Lahab commanded his sons to divorce the daughters of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So Utbah divorced Ruqayya, or he separated from Ruqayya, before he had any relations with her. As for Ruqayya, then she accepted Islam along with her mother and sisters, and she married Uthman ibn Affan, and she performed the 2 hijras to Abyssinia and to Al-Madinah along with him. And she gave birth to the son of Uthman, Abdullah. And he died at the age of 6. And then she performed the hijra to Al-Madinah, and she became ill before Badr. And obviously Uthman radiallahu anhu, he stayed away from Badr to look after Ruqayya. And she died. She died in Ramadan in the 2nd year of the hijrah. And that's when, and they mention that the good news of the victory at Badr, where it just reached Medina, just as they had finished burying Ruqayya radiallahu anha. As for the 4th child, then it was Umm Kulthum, who was also born in Mecca before Islam. It is said that she married Utaybah ibn Abi Lahab, another son of Abu Lahab, who also separated from her on the orders of his father, before having relations with her. Kulthum accepted Islam, performed the hijrah to Al-Madinah, and then after the death of Ruqayya, she also married Uthman in Rabi'ul Awwal of the 3rd year, which is why Uthman radiallahu anhu is known by the title Dhun Nurayn, the possessor of the 2 lights. Uthman radiallahu anhu, first he was married to Ruqayya, and then she died, and then he married Kulthum. She didn't give birth to any children, and she died in Sha'ban in the 9th year of the Hijrah. As for the 5th child, then it was Fatima, radiallahu anha. She was born in Mecca just before prophethood. And she, of course, married Ali, radiallahu an, married him after Badr in the 2nd year. And she gave birth to a number of children, to Al-Hasan and Al-Husayn and Al-Muhassin, who died as a child, and Kulthum and Zainab. And Fatima, radiallahu anha, she died after the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam by around 6 months. She's the only child of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam who lived longer than he did. I mean, who lived after the death of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. All the others died before. And the 6th child, another son, was Abdullah, who was also known as At-Tayyib, the good and pure one, At-Tahir, the pure one. He was born in Mecca after Islam, and he died as a baby. And he was the 2nd of the children to die. I mean, after Al-Qasim, first Al-Qasim died, and then Abdullah died. And the 7th and last child of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam was his son Ibrahim. And his mother was Maria al-Qibtiyya. She was the only child of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, which was not born through Khadija. So the mother of Ibrahim was Maria al-Qibtiyya. And Ibrahim was born in Al-Madinah in the month of Dhul-Hijjah in the 8th year. And he died at the age of 10 months. He died in the year 10 after the Hijrah, somewhere in the region of 10 months. Of course, that figure doesn't add up there. 10 months after 8 Hijrah doesn't amount to 10 Hijrah. No, so approximately 10 months, around about a year or so. Wallahu a'lam. Now, any points of clarification? As far as I know, he died. Umama died as a child, as far as I know. Wallahu a'lam. Yeah. That's what's well known, that they survived. Obviously, Al-Hassan survived and Al-Husayn survived, and then their children survived and grew many. That's what's well known. Both together. They said, Sheikh Fawzan said, with regard to the scholars, he divided the scholars into three categories. Firstly, the scholars of ulama al-athar, the scholars of the narrations. Secondly, ulama, the fuqaha, who are the ulama al-diraya, the scholars of understanding of the texts. Then he mentioned, and there are some who gathered both together. He just said there's some who gathered both together. I don't know what he said. And some of them gathered both branches of knowledge together, and they are called Fuqaha al-Muhaddithin. Fuqaha al-Muhaddithin. I mean, those scholars of hadith who are jurists as well, such as Imam Ahmad, Malik, Al-Shafi'i, Al-Bukhari, and so on. Fuqaha al-Muhaddithin. As for the question here, that's not a question as well, is it? Looks like an essay on one side of the paper, so I'll leave that. please, can you repeat the number of companions? Then the quote of Abu Zur'a was that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam died and left behind 114,000 companions. that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the whole quote of Abu Zur'a, Imam Abu Zur'a al-Razi, was there witnessed along with him, along with the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, at the final pilgrimage, 40,000. And there was along with him at Tabuk, the battle of expedition of Tabuk, 70,000. And he, alayhi salam, died and left behind 114,000 companions, reported by Al-Khatib in his book Al-Jami' and quoted by Ibn al-Salah and others as well. In the Durood, does the family of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam also include the wives and offspring? Obviously, there's different wordings authentic from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. With regard to the Durood, there's different wordings that are authentic, and you can refer to, in that regard, to the book of Shaykh al-Albani, rahimahullah, Sifat al-Salat, with regard to the Tashahud and the different forms of the Durood that are authentic. And some of them actually directly mention the Azwaj, the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and his Dhurriya, his offspring. And then otherwise, then they're included in his Al, in his family. Sallallahu alaihi wa ala alihi wa sallam. His Al, his true followers, and his family included amongst that. Wallahu a'lam bi'an that. Because he's made it, the way that Sheikh al-Fawzan explained it, he made it different. He went along with in the text it's mentioned, with regard to Ahlul Bayt, obviously his children also fall into that as well. His children fall into his household. But the point he's making a difference, that he was discussing, first of all, who are the Ahlul Bayt, contrary to what the Rafi, the Shia say. Obviously the Rafi, the Shia, they say it's just the close relatives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and not his wives. His wives are not included amongst the Ahlul Bayt. So all the virtues of the Ahlul Bayt, they don't apply to his wives. And of course, then they've opened the door for themselves to make all the slanders and lies which they do against his wives. And of course, the correct thing is, as Sheikh al-Fawzan mentioned, his wives, first and foremost, are from his family. As is clear from the ayah from Surah Al-Ahzab, ayah 33, when they address is to his wives, and they are addressed, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُذْهِبَ عَنْكُمُ الرِّجْزِ أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ وَيُطَهِّرُكُمْ تَطْهِيرًا. Allah, with the explanation, Allah only wishes to remove evil from you, O people of the household, and to keep you pure from the pollution which affects the people of sins. So this ayah is an address to the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and they are addressed as أَهْلَ الْبَيْتِ, O people of the household. So Sheikh al-Fawzan said, of course, first and foremost they enter into it. If the matter of the who are the household, who they are, first and foremost are the wives of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And of course, also, his close relatives as well. And then he moves on to the other matter. And as for his children, his dhurriya, they were such and such. He mentioned who they were. But of course, his children are from his household. Yeah, they're from Ahlul Bayt. Sheikh just made a distinction just to clarify what is meant by Ahlul Bayt, but not to exclude the children from it. And then what is the who are the Dhurriya? When it said his Dhurriya, his offspring, who are they? As for the age of As-Sa'ib ibn Yazid, radiallahu anhu, when he died, then he was aged 87. He died in Al-Madinah. He was the last of the companions to die in Al-Madinah in the year 91. He was aged 87. As for the ayah from Surah An-Nur, Al-Khabithatu lil-Khabithina wal-Khabithuna lil-Khabithat, the ayah. And with regard to the explanation, then good women are for good men, and good men are for good women. Yeah. Oh, Asif, hey. Allah musta'an. Jazakallah khairan. It's the other way round. The other way round. That the, obviously, the opposite of what I said. Obviously, al-khabith is foul and bad and the like. That evil women are for evil men, and evil men are for evil women, and good women are for good men, and good men are for good women. Jazakallah khair. Obviously, al-khabith means foul and evil and bad. And tayyib is the opposite, is good. So the correct explanation of the eye is the other way around. Seems so, yeah, seems. No. As for Maria al-Qibtiyya, then she was a slave girl sent as a gift to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Maria al-Qibtiyya, Maria the Coptic woman, and she was a gift sent by the ruler of Abyssinia. So she was a slave girl of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.